I'm Marlena, and you're listening to the Marlena Program, heard weekly at this time on ACB Radio Mainstream. For the next 2 hours, give or take, we'll be taking your phone calls at 866-666-7926. Love to hear your thoughts, your comments, your ideas, your suggestions, your opinions, whatever. Why don't you come on in, get comfy, spend some time with me, and give me a call, huh? Right here on Marlena.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Marlena Show. And Marlena and Gary, the board guy, are out cruising the seas. That's right. And they're out having fun. And so we'll be here for the next 2 weeks. And we'll be bringing you the Marlena Show. And tonight we have a very, very special guest. See, this is in reference to Marlena and Gary, the board guy. And if you listened to the Desert Sky Show the other night, then you would have heard this too. And let's see if we can. There, let's kill that. Okay. And but anyway, they're out cruising around, and I don't remember where they went. And I think if some of you heard the Marlena Show, maybe you can remind me. I forget where exactly their cruise went. But tonight on the Marlena Program, during the first hour, we have a very, very special guest that I'm very excited about talking to. I don't often get the opportunity to talk with him except at conferences and things of that ilk. But I do really enjoy it when I do, and we'll actually be able to learn a heck of a lot more about Jamal Mazrui. Many of you know his wife, Susan, who works for Singular, or now the mega merger of AT&T, I think it is. And we've seen her at the ACB convention a number of times, and actually speaking on behalf of Singular in reference to accessibility. But we haven't really had an opportunity to talk to Jamal himself. And one of the things that he's been up to is writing some very accessible applications, and we won't get into all the techie details of those. We'll save that for a main menu at some point. And but we want to find out more about Jamal, and who is Jamal, and what makes him tick, and then we will spend a little bit of time talking about his applications, that being TextPal and FileDir and a bunch of other things that he's actually released as being freeware for everyone to use. And we'll tell you all about what those utilities are and have him describe them. And we'll be taking your calls tonight, but we will be using a different number, 866-400-JEFF, 866-400-5333. And as we were getting ready to begin broadcasting tonight, we actually got a call from Mike Calvo, and he's at CES, so maybe we'll try to actually get him on during the second hour if he's still at his computer. We'll attempt to do that. If he's around, maybe he can give us some updates. I know that from talking to him, they were going to be making a pretty major announcement in reference to FreedomBox, but I don't want to steal that thunder. We'll let him do that if we can get him on. So without further ado, let's bring on Jamal Mazrui. Hello, Jamal.
Hi, Jeff.
How's it going?
All right.
All right. And how's Susan doing?
She's well, thanks.
Oh, good. And the baby. Now, you know, I know the baby came in October. Is that right?
October 8th.
Oh, when?
September 8th.
Oh, September 8th. Marlena thought it was in October.
Close.
So, yeah, well, I'm sure Susan would say, "Oh, you want me to carry that thing around for another month?" That probably wouldn't have been too good. Now, let's see. Remind me, boy or girl?
A girl.
Girl.
Nicole.
What's her name again?
Nicole.
Okay. All right. So she's about 3 months old then?
About
four months.
Months.
4 months. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. And that's great. So you getting any sleep?
I am. And actually, she's been sleeping more regularly lately. But
that's good.
I have to say it's that aspect is tougher on Susan than me.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. Yeah, we talked a little bit about that. And until Microsoft comes out with a breastfeeding method in .NET, well, you're in trouble.
Right.
So, well, again, the number tonight is 866-400-JEFF, 866-400-5333.
And before we get into the application stuff later in the hour, we thought we would talk to you a little bit about you. Who are you? And when Marlena does these, she always likes to, of course, start back early. And let's start with when you were a small guy. Now, where did you grow up?
I spent my first 8 years in Uganda, which is on the eastern, in the eastern part of Africa.
Oh, okay.
And we moved to the U.S. In 72.
Okay, 72. So now, what was it like being a blind person in, you know, in Uganda like that? Was that different?
I didn't lose my sight till I was 16. So
oh, 16.
Back then I was sighted, yeah.
Oh, okay. So you pretty much grew up, you know, doing normal stuff without having to worry about, you know, being blind and that kind of thing.
That's true.
Yeah. So how did you become blind?
It's a rare genetic disease of the optic nerve called Leber's, L-E-B-E-R apostrophe S, optic neuropathy.
Ah.
And we didn't know it was in our family background on either side until it first happened to my brother. About 9 months before me, my youngest
brother,
Kim. And
now, how old was he?
I think he was about 9 at the time.
Nine years old.
It was some kind of a side effect of chicken pox he had just had, but then they diagnosed it as Leber's. I guess the doctor who first identified this was his name was Leber.
Interesting. Jamal, hold on to that thought.
Sure.
We actually have a caller. Hello, caller, and welcome to the Marlena program. Hello, caller?
Yeah, hi. It's Scott calling from Silver Spring, Maryland. How are you?
Hey, Scott, how's it going? Right next door.
In full disclosure, I'm compelled to tell you that Jamal is one of my best friends.
Oh, is he? I was wondering why Jamal was chuckling.
I didn't mean really to interrupt the discussion of his childhood.
Well, that's all right. That's what we're here for.
I wanted to say a few things about him, but I wanted to make sure that he stuck his fingers in his ears.
Oh, no. Uh-oh.
Oh, great. Okay.
About his programming and about some of these wonderful tools that he's created for us.
Yes, yes. Why don't you go ahead and do that?
But I want to hear the rest of the biography, you know.
Okay, well,
how often do you ask a friend of yours to bare their soul?
Well, that's right. Well, you know, we'll get back to that, but did you want to say anything about the tools or Jamal himself, or did you want to call back?
Absolutely. Okay, so Jamal, stick the fingers in the ears and shut up and be quiet, okay?
Yeah.
No, actually, I really am impressed with both, with all of the programs that Jamal has developed. It's amazing the amount of time that he's put into the development of these tools, how mnemonic they are, how easy they are to use, even for those of us who are technologically challenged.
Some of us
have to learn the entire program or read a long manual to be able to use them. You can sort of learn the program as you go along. If you want to, you know, to use certain features, you can do that. You want to, for example, in Filder, if you want to attach the highlighted files to an email message as a detachment, Shift-Control-M, boom, it's done.
Right, right.
And it's that kind of human factors engineering that really makes these things very workable. And I always kid Jamal. I say, Jamal, you've missed your calling. You could make a whole lot of money on this stuff.
Well, you know, I was going to mention that tonight. I was going to mention that tonight, actually, when we started talking about that, you know, he's releasing these things as freeware, and you know, man, he could definitely make quite a bit of money at selling them. And but I have a little information that kind of gives me an understanding about that from one of Jamal and I's very, very close and personal friends, and he's probably and we won't mention that here unless he wants to, Don. So, all right. Well, what's it like hanging around with Jamal?
Oh, Oh boy, you don't want to know those stories, Jeff.
Yeah, but, well, yeah, we hear him on the DC Night Out podcast quite often.
With, oh no,
with
yeah,
Nicola.
People listen to that.
And we have a few other nights out too.
Oh, do you now? Well, we won't. This is a family show. We'll keep it that way.
He's a very wonderful father, and you should see the beautiful niece that I have.
Oh, that's
not really her uncle, but I might.
No, well, yeah, I understand.
And that's been pretty cool too since September 8th.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get to that and find out how it's kind of changed them all, because you know I have two kids and
oh my gosh, yes, it has changed them all incredibly.
Yeah, well we'll find out.
He used to be a party boy, and he's not a party boy anymore.
Well, we'll find out more about that in the coming few minutes here. So, all right, Scott. Well, thank you very much for calling in.
All right, guys, I will continue to listen. Take care. Have a
all right,
night.
Thanks. 866-400-5333. 866-400-Jeff. Now, let's see. Now, were you involved in technology at all, like computers and stuff like that? Probably not. Well, maybe. So, let's see. So, 16, you would have been 1980, correct, Jamal?
Let's see. When I lost my sight. Yeah, it was about then. And let me just say, Scott really surprised me. He's a good buddy, and I'm truly blushing. So.
Oh, that's quite all right. You may blush more. So, okay. So now computers, at least at that time, were not really hitting the home market yet. Some of the game systems were. Were you involved in some of that as a kid?
I wasn't. No, actually, I wasn't that much of a geek until the end of college.
Oh, really? Okay.
I got my own personal talking computer, and that's when I kind of became transformed.
So what was it like? What were you like when you were growing up? Did you play sports or what?
Yeah, let's see. In Uganda, I remember loving football, what we call soccer here,
uh-huh,
playing marbles.
Uh-huh.
In the U.S., those.
So
sports.
mainly just kid stuff, outdoor
yeah,
stuff, and yeah.
Typical
yeah.
kid stuff.
Well, that's
yeah.
that's good to know that a geek like you kind of had a normal childhood. We have another caller. Hello, caller, and welcome to the Marlena program.
Hey there, Jeff. How you doing? It's Tim Cummings, Bruce of Cooking.
Oh my goodness!
Oh boy, all these guys are coming out of the woodwork. How you doing, Tim? Hey, good production.
Jamal and I are old pals, and Jamal's wife. Went to school with my wife, who Jamal fixed me up with, actually.
Oh,
went to school
hey,
with Jamal,
good matchmaker
so.
There.
Yeah.
Now, was that...
How you doing, Jamal?
Hey, Tim, great to hear your voice.
Now, was that... was?
Listen, we want to settle... Cheryl and I are having a fierce debate, and we want to settle this. She says you when you were at Princeton... You got a degree in mechanical engineering, and I said it was mathematics. So who's right, Jamal?
Gosh, neither of you are quite right. It was the civil engineering department. It was a branch of that they called systems engineering at the time, which is generally known as operations research or what people understand better as applied math.
Okay. Well, I was close. I was close.
But it was definitely not pure mathematics,
Jeff, and, say,
and it was not mechanical engineering.
Jamal, so somewhere has been doing this programming for a while.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember this, Jeff, but one of Jamal's great old programs back in the DOS days was CTS, which I used religiously for years, which was a fabulous database system.
Yeah,
didn't
you also write a talking checkbook program too, Jamal?
That was Charlie Crawford and Don Barrett.
Oh, okay.
I did write Talking Directory, which was kind of my DOS version of Filder.
Oh, okay. Oh, Don Barrett was worked with Charlie on that, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. So hey, Tim. By the way, before
I hear you, Jamal, and we're glued to the radio here.
Oh, thanks.
I also
tune
into the DC Night Out podcast, and one of these days I'm going to get get my butt down to D.C. and join you guys.
Hey, Tim. Oh, hey, Tim. Good. Tim, before I let you go, could you drop me a quick email? I would like to talk to you about potentially next week. And
sure.
I'll get with you on
sure,
that.
No problem.
In reference to cooking in the dark and stuff like that.
Jeff Bishop at jeff@acdradio.org.
That would work, although I'm not sure I'll ever get it due to the due to the ACB radio mail server at the moment. But go ahead and send an email to jeff.bishop@gmail.com.
Yeah. Okay, no problem.
And I'm going to call you tomorrow if that's all right.
Oh, that's fine, yeah.
Okay, I'll call you. Put your number in there.
All
I'll
right,
give you a call.
Great to talk to you, Jamal, and hi to Susan Forrest, and we'll be down to see you guys one of these days.
Sounds good.
All right, great. Thanks, Tim.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. He is the producer for Cooking in the Dark, among a number of other shows here on Mainstream, and he does a fabulous job, and so we're going to talk to him, and he may... Well, I better not say this now because I don't want to get in trouble with Mr. Tim Cummings. But I'm sure he'll say yes. So we'll.
I think Tim is also the webmaster of the ViBug site.
Oh, I think he is. Yeah.
User group.
He gets
which
around.
Is a group I started many years ago, and then at one point he was head of the group, and now he's webmaster.
All right. So what was it like for you going blind at 16? That must have been a pretty traumatic experience for you.
It was. I was a junior in high school, and it's a kind of age when
sure
guys are trying to prove their masculinity.
Exactly. Yes.
Drive and all of that. Mm. One thing that really made a difference for me was the National Federation of the Blind. I was introduced to it by someone I met, and I was quite inspired by speeches of Kenneth Jernigan.
Sure, sure.
So that did help me have a different outlook on life.
So did you learn Braille and things in high school then, or did you wait until after high school for that, or how did that work?
Yes, I had... over the summer, I went to a rehab center where I started learning Braille, and then I continued my senior year with an itinerant teacher who visited my high school, and and then I actually went back over another summer to the Michigan program, and actually at another point a year or so later I took some time off college to go to a program in Baltimore because I wanted some more intense study in skills of blindness.
So you were mainstreamed then, basically.
Yes, I was in the mainstream, and I remained for
last
about
year
and
a
half
too.
Of high school that was left. After
yeah.
I lost my
well, that's good, because yeah. The school district could have said, "Hey, we're going to stick him in, you know, some blind school somewhere," and you know that's good that you're able to hang around with your friends and all that. So,
that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
So yeah. then you started college. And did you really have an idea as to what, you know, obviously now things were a little different because, you know, you were blind at this point. So did you know what you wanted to major in at that time when you went to college?
Well, I kept on changing from one kind of engineering to another. When I first went to college, I was thinking of mechanical engineering, and I think it was electrical engineering. And, and then I went for... what they called systems engineering, which is also known as operations research or applied math. And I also combined that with public policy as kind of a second major. And then I went on to graduate school and did a master's in public policy.
So what was it like for you then, you know, going to college and really having to adapt? You know, we didn't really have computers then necessarily.
I was highly dependent on sighted readers, and I was in a fortunate position. The combination of sponsorship from the state of Michigan and the resources of Princeton University, I could hire whatever readers I needed, and it worked out fairly well. I would make a pitch at the like the first day of class, in various courses, and to see if anybody might be interested in reading for me, and they could earn the same work study rate as other student jobs on campus, and they could be studying
their
same material that they would have to read anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
But I used a lot of readers, and it wasn't until I think my final semester senior year that there was a talking computer in the library that I started using, and then.
Oh, really? So what was
that?
Graduate school.
I wanted to have my own personal computer.
Yeah. So what did you have at the library?
It was an IBM running the program called QWERTY. The QWERTY word processor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. So not really even a screen reader then, it was mainly just something to get stuff typed in and...
Right. I think it was a dedicated talking word processor.
Yeah, okay. All right, cool. So then when did you get your first computer? After graduate school?
It was the first semester of graduate school. I had applied to a nonprofit that tries to help out students with disabilities, and I got a grant that was enough to enable me to buy my own personal computer. So that's when I got it, and I remember I had ended up getting Screen Talk Pro as my screen reader.
Ah, okay.
And Edge was the brand of the computer. And
what year was that?
Let's see. 1986.
Okay.
Yeah, and
so I think Jaws. I think Jaws for DOS was not even out yet, right?
Right. I don't think that was quite out yet.
Yeah. I think Arctic was.
Yeah, I think Arctic was, and I think Vert was a common one.
Yeah, Vert. Yep.
Another one called the Enhanced PC Talking Program. Okay, we're not supposed to get too geeky on this.
That's all right.
But basically what happened was I just became obsessed and have been ever since with computers and trying to get the computer to do things for me. So it started out just with word processing, and then I wanted to do macros to automate more things.
Right.
As you know, a macros tends to be just kind of recording keystrokes.
Mm-hmm.
But then it went on to including logic. So, you know, if
baby this steps.
Condition is met, do this. Otherwise, do this. Which
right.
Led right into programming. And I learned the DBase language, it was called, where I did my first database programming, and it kind of went on from there, one language after another.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you haven't stopped since. So now, where did you when you finished graduate school? Where did you start working, or did you take some time off and kind of do some independent things, or what did you do?
Well, that was actually a difficult time for me. Was after I graduated, I had this master's degree from the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, and all my peers were getting these good positions in federal or state government as policy analysts, I thought that I'd gone to this prestigious school, people aren't going to think about my blindness.
Right.
Well, unfortunately, that wasn't the case, and
yeah.
I applied for job after job without success, probably about 100 in all. Eventually got a job doing programming work. It was a company called Advocate Development Corporation, which developed fundraising management software for nonprofit organizations. Now, part of the problem was, though, that I had this strong notion that I did not want to work in a disability-related context, and it's an issue that I think we're all familiar with, where, well, to put it in my terms, I was very much at that time committed to contributing to the organized blind movement at that time,
mm-hmm.
through the local chapters of the NFB. But I wanted that to be part of my extracurricular life, something I
sure.
did on my own personal time.
Right.
And I wanted my 9-to-5 job, so to speak, to be not disability related.
Sure. Yeah.
I wanted, and actually, in a way, it was also because I thought the best way I could make a difference to blind people was by, I think nothing changes people's attitudes more about blind people than sighted people witnessing them doing things, doing paid work.
Exactly.
That is not related
to their disability. Right.
If they're volunteering, you know, that's one thing sighted people can appreciate. And if they're doing paid work and it's related to disability, you know, that has value. I'm not saying it doesn't, but it becomes easy for sighted people to discount. They'll say, oh, well, isn't that wonderful? They're helping their own. But when a blind person is doing work for which they're getting paid, and the work is not related to disability, I think then they think about it and they go, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
A person really can do things that aren't related to their blindness.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted that to be my professional work. And another part of it was that I was aware, and I still believe this, that once one starts working directly in the disability field, it's very easy to get pigeonholed, unfortunately, so that thereafter,
You get stuck.
Becomes hard to get out.
Well, I think that's true. I think that's true of anything, though, whether it's disability or it's other careers. I think it's hard for even sighted people to switch careers, even too. But you're right.
I think it's true, but I do think that there is this additional aspect if you're a person with a disability. I've observed people who, like, reached high level management positions in a disability nonprofit or government agency, and then for whatever reason they no longer have that position and they can't make the switch to the private sector in something, or government sector, but something that's not disability related. And I think what's going on is the sighted employers, they don't think about what skills are transferable. Hey, this person knows how to analyze policies or manage people or manage budgets. They could do that for my organization. Instead, they just, and I'm sure a lot of it is subconscious. They just have this narrow view that
exactly.
They were working in disability. Well, you know, that's great, but, you know, I'm not a disability operation here, so they wouldn't really fit in here. So anyway, that's a circuitous route, but I think it's a topic that people can relate to, and I'm curious about other people's ideas on this.
Before we get back to you, only because a number of us a couple of weeks ago were talking about sort of this kind of subject of you know, jobs and you know, there's a real high percentage of blind people who are not working. And do you think that that plays a significant role in that percentage?
How do you mean?
Well, I mean, you know, what is it? I think 70% of blind people are not working. Is that? I think that's the current. I think that's the current estimate. Is that right?
Yeah.
Between 70 and 70, something like that.
Something like that. Yeah.
Do you think a lot of that is because of perception, of you know, of employers?
I think it's my personal opinion is it's a combination. I think part of it is discrimination, and I think part of it is that this is a little kind of thing was is hard to say now.
Well, I
mean, it's politically correct. I do think the current Social Security system creates incentives or disincentives, so that
I see what you're saying. Yes,
a lot of people decide it's just not worth it.
But isn't that a vicious circle, though? In that, you know, the two really combine to be a really vicious circle. You know,
yes.
You can't have one really without the other. I mean, if employers didn't have this, you know, issue, then you wouldn't have the other issue, I don't think. I mean, it's hard to say, but I mean,
I think
that's, yeah. Let me give the number again, 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF, if you'd like to come on in and talk to Jamal Mazrui and me tonight. We'd love to talk with you. So, okay, so you started to work for them, and what kind of programming were you doing?
It was in a variant of the DBase language called Clipper.
Oh, yes, Clipper, yep.
And it was basically, it was software that would help an organization keep track of donations and pledges that came in and send out acknowledgement letters and run calculations of revenues and that kind of stuff. And I worked there for several months. Then it actually, like a lot of small software companies, didn't make it, and I was one of the people laid off. I don't think that was blindness related. And then, luckily for me, this time there wasn't a long a period. I found a position back at the school where I had graduated from a year before in the alumni office, and I was kind of the database administrator for the alumni office at the Kennedy School, and that involved working with various kinds of database software and programming.
Ah. Hey, we have another caller, but first I'm going to ask that the caller turn down their radio, not radio, but their computer, because we can hear it in the background. So we'll give you just a minute to do that, and then we'll bring the caller on. So hold on 1 second here and give them a couple more seconds. Okay. Hello, caller, and welcome
Hello.
To the Hello, welcome to the Marlena program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've known Jamal a long time, although I've not...
Yeah, you need to turn down that computer. We can.
There are two of us trying to listen, so it's a little loud.
Yeah, sorry about that, but we're going to get a delay here, so it makes it kind of difficult.
But I've been calling for a couple of quick things.
Okay.
Jamal and I were roommates for apartment mates for a few years, and known him a long time. And
oh, my God.
But I want to say, the first thing I want to say is I really appreciate Jamal raising some of these points about dealing with the job market and the reasons we blind folks have trouble with it, and that it is a mix of things. And you know, we talked about it in those days, and a lot of it really does seem to be the same. There are also the issues of technologies constantly shifting, sometimes for the better and sometimes for the worse for us.
We'll get to that topic too.
Sorry, what?
We'll get to that topic too. I actually want to touch on that.
I also agree with those who have said. I mean, Jamal writes really good programs and manuals. I haven't used them to the full extent that I might, because I've been otherwise diverted sometimes. But he really has a good sense of what users need.
That's okay. A lot of us have not used all the features because there's just way too many.
That's what the program's supposed to do, you know. And,
he's very thorough.
You know, among Jamal's credits are, I believe, three marriages. Certainly mine is one of them. So I guess if any of these other businesses doesn't work out, he could, you know, start a different sort.
So, all right.
Oh, this is wonderful, Jeff. Al Sten is a... Sten Clanton now is a lifelong friend. It's just wonderful to hear these people coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah, this is great.
Here's the wife to say a quick hello, and then we'll give the thing to play to somebody else.
Okay, great.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the Marlena program. How are you tonight?
All right. How are you?
We're doing great. Say hi to Jamal.
I'm Masha Sten Plantinel's wife.
Ah, say hello to Jamal.
And, I used Jamal's text pal program this past holiday season to read the Christmas Revels program. And, you know, the Christmas Revels, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense if you can't read the program. They have all these, you know, historical recreations of various things, and the program is what tells you what they are. And so because of Jamal's TextPal program, I was able to download their PDF, turn it into a text document, and load that into the Braille note, and have a portable program to take with me and sing along silent everybody else did. And so it can really made the holidays a little more special.
Yeah, that's great. That's
neat. Anyway, I just wanted to say hello to Jamal. And,
well, thanks, Masha.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in, and we appreciate you listening tonight.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. If you'd like to call in tonight at 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF is the number, and we're using my 800 number because that's the one I have access to, as opposed to Marlena's 866 number. So, okay, let's see. All right, so then, so you were laid off, and I think all of us in the tech industry have been laid off at one time or another. Oh, we have another caller. Let's bring them in here before we get on to another topic. Hello, caller, and welcome to the Marlena program.
Hey, it's Daryl.
Oh, yes. Okay, let me turn you down. There you go. Hello, Daryl. How are you?
Great.
Oh, good.
Hi, Jamal.
Hey, Daryl.
So I knew Daryl was going to be calling in tonight. Daryl, by the way, how are things on the mainstream side?
Sounding good over there. Sounding really good over there right now.
Okay, good. We had some hiccups over on the actual part where we actually stream, so I just wanted to make sure that things were okay over there. All right, so what's up, Daryl?
Well, hey, Jamal. I just wanted to say that it was cool working with you on the Google issue at CSUN, and then I've been using both your PDF to TXT and your TextPal programs through their different iterations, and wow, man, I think PDF to TXT pretty much saved my job over the past year, because I work with just a boatload of PDF files, and man, the Adobe, the Acrobat Reader is a clunk in comparison. This thing is just really fast and does a really good conversion job, and thanks a lot for putting it out there.
Yeah, now how many PDFs are you handling during a week, Daryl? You're handling tons of them, right? 40, 50 of them a week?
At least 50. I have to read through all kinds of documents and pull out information from them and from various sources and put together solutions that I write for a knowledge base.
Exactly. And yeah, we'll actually get to the different applications, but I knew Daryl had been using that, and I'm glad that he called in to let Jamal publicly know this, too, that, you know, that these things that he's producing here that are free are having a significant impact on the lives and careers of individuals.
Well, that's really gratifying, Daryl, and I appreciate your saying that, because there's nothing that means more to me than knowing that something that I've put out there to try to help people is making a difference in their job.
I was reading on the blind programming list, and Justin was having to do some compares between two databases. And I don't know if, Daryl, if you've ever had to do this, where you had to do a diff between two different files and try to see what the differences were. But,
no.
Yeah, wow. That can be an unbelievable pain in the neck. And I just, my mouth dropped when Jamal's like, well, yeah, just do, and we won't get into the details, but just do X, Y, and Z and text pal, and it was unbelievable. I mean,
that's cool.
Yeah, that worked and provided a solution to Justin. You know, I mean, without having to grab a coworker and go, okay, I ran Beyond Compare, and, you know, okay, what are the differences? or dropping to a DOS prompt and running file compare on two text files or something. So, yeah, it's that kind of a thing that, you know, really, really does change the independence and ability to be able to be as productive as others that Jamal's making an impact with. So, all right, did you have anything else, Daryl?
Oh, I think that's it. And keep up the great work, Jamal. And thanks again. And looking forward to many more great things going on in the future.
I know, we need to clone Jamal.
Keep up your
absolutely
great work, Daryl. I really appreciate all your advocacy and your blog and stuff.
Great, thanks, Daryl. You can call in the second hour if you want to.
Good night.
Good night. All right, 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF, if you would like to call in tonight. And, all right, so let's see. So, yeah, you had just been, we have yet another caller. See what I'm saying? It goes crazy around here. We'll get to the applications at some point. Hello there. Hello, caller. This is Jeff and Jamal on the Marlena program.
How are you doing, guys?
Good. Is this Dave?
Dave McElroy, my
agent. Yes, I thought it was. How you doing, Dave?
I don't think Jamal and I have ever pressed the flesh, but Jamal, good to meet you over the phone.
Nice to meet
you. I've heard about you over the years, and remember back in the days, rest her soul, when Barbara Aiken was really taken with your work.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the early 90s, I should say. She was out of Phoenix.
I do remember her.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway, I do have a question, and I was just curious. I've never talked to somebody before in your particular situation. What made, obviously it wasn't your blindness, what made your family decide that it was time to leave, you know, East Africa and come all the way across the world?
That's a very good question.
To America.
Well, we initially went because my father had a visiting professorship at Stanford University. He was a professor of political science. But while we were in California, violence broke out in Uganda under the dictator Idi Amin, and my parents decided it would be too dangerous to return, particularly because of the nature of my father's job. He would comment on political affairs of the nation, and it was a real risk that if he said anything that displeased the government, we could have had soldiers knocking at our door in the middle of the night.
Must have been scary as a kid, huh?
Yeah, well, not so much while we were there, but certainly after we went away.
Idi Amin, obviously over the years, their loss is our gain, and you know, we're certainly it was just something I was real curious about, and thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Now let me ask you this, Jamal, you know, if you had gone blind there, how would that have? Could they have handled that type of situation there?
Oh, that's a good question.
Probably don't really know, I guess.
Yeah, I don't.
I mean, as a kid, how would you really be really aware? But it's fascinating to think about, you know, like what would your parents have done?
If I had to guess, they might have sent me to some kind of a school abroad that they thought was better able to teach me, you know, skills of independence than what might have been available there in the country.
Interesting. Dave, do you have anything else? Oh, I think Dave had hung up. Okay. 866-400-5333. And you know what? We're not going to get all the way through things by the end of the hour. Are you willing to stick around during the second hour?
Sure.
Okay, great. Thanks. Thanks, Susan, for us. Okay, so now you were laid off, and then I kind of forgot what you had gone to work for whom? You at the school?
I went to work for the Kennedy School of Government in the alumni office.
Okay. Okay. And were you doing programming for them?
Yes, I was doing
more Clipper and such.
Yeah, Clipper.
Now is this
Foxbase, all database related languages.
Now, have you released anything yet to the community yet at this point, or were you still just working? And you know, when did you start releasing things like Talking Poetry?
Yeah, I think it was while I was at the Kennedy School that I did start my software business on the side. I called Access Success.
Okay.
With the slogan.
So you used Blink Link and things like that.
Yes.
Yes. Right. Yes. We have another caller. Hello, caller. Welcome to the Marlena program.
Hello, can you all hear me?
We can hear you just fine. Can you hear us all right?
You're a little faint, but that's okay. This is Don Barrett.
How hey, you Don. Man, all the weirdos are coming out tonight. especially you, Don. All those others were kind of normal,
well,
but now the real weirdos coming
world,
out.
You know.
So what was it like drinking with Jamal at DC Night Out?
He doesn't remember.
Yeah,
doesn't
we ought to show with one of those. That would be kind of interesting.
Oh, boy. Don and I are pretty good friends, and we Skype quite a bit. And I called Don at home.
I don't want to take up a lot of time because
that's
I know
right.
You guys have so much to talk about. But I just want to publicly acknowledge that, you know, Jamal, I think you're really one of the heroes in the blindness community.
Hear, hear.
People don't realize how much time goes into writing code. And, you know, in this materialistic society of ours, everybody's trying to make a buck. But, you know, of course, you've got a full-time job with the government, and yet you're willing to do this coding and make these programs available at no charge. And you really are finding all the niches where people need software that they don't have, and you're filling those niches. And I'm very grateful. I use your stuff at work all the time. And I just wanted to thank you so much for your hard work and for making this stuff available to us.
That means a lot, bud. Thanks.
All right. So, now, Don, we had you on about exercise, remember?
Yeah, right, right. I'm still exercising, not as much as I was. But
oh, that's good. Well, that's all right. That's all right. That's good. We were just going to see how you were doing on all that. Oh, good. All right.
Well, I'll let you guys keep on talking.
All right.
And I just wanted to say hello and add my thanks and appreciation to, the people who are calling in and those who don't get to call in. I know your stuff is widely available, and I'd like to see some podcasts on some of the more esoteric features so that people can really learn. Matter of fact, maybe I'll do a couple myself on it.
Yeah, that would be great. Put them up on... Hey, you could submit it to main menu.
Yeah, that'd be great.
There you go. All right.
All right, Jamal, maybe we'll take that offline and talk some about that, and you can teach me about some of these features I don't fully understand. And
you
then
can do it over some.
I'll put together a podcast.
You can do it over a beer at DC Night Out.
That sounds really good, actually, because one of the areas that I'm really not good at is audio related productions, and I have been asked to kind of do a webcast before showing features of my software, and I just haven't felt confident enough with use of the equipment to pull it off. And I know it might sound funny to some people,
but I just tend to be
specialized in the kinds of things that I know how to do well and not in other kinds of computer things. And to me, it would just be wonderful if other people who are good at other things, like producing tutorials and podcasts and that kind of thing, I'd support them all the way in helping them do something related to some of these programs.
All right. Well, we'll
all right. We'll talk more about that.
Yeah, Don and I will get together, and we'll get in touch with you, too, and we'll put something together. All right, Don. Well, thank you very, very much for calling, and... yeah, he's...
All right. You guys take care now.
Okay. Thanks for listening, Don. All right, 866-400. Man, you sure know a lot of people. 866-400-5333. And not that the other people were weird, but Don is definitely strange.
I went to Don's wedding, and it was a trip.
The real Halloween theme. Yeah, I helped him put together the music for that.
He put
the music together, and then I burned it to a couple CDs and FedExed them to him, and able to get them going there. And yeah, what we were going to get married on Halloween, and then our parents were like, "You're not going to do that. That's just not going to happen." So you started to release Talking Directory the first thing?
The first one was Contact Tracking System.
That's right, CTS.
A contact database, mm-hmm. mailing list.
And that was around for Anatomy. Years.
What's that?
That was around for years and years.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think it did fairly well as DOS programs go. And
you could come out with WinCTS now.
In a way, it's been a goal of mine to kind of be able to do some of the things I did in DOS, and it's taken many years being able to gain the skills where I thought I could do a respectable job.
Sure.
Under Windows, but the Filder program that I've recently released is kind of my attempt at reviving Talking Directory and also things I've learned since then.
Hold on 1 second, Randy.
Under Windows.
We have another caller, and I'm sure this is another strange person who you probably know, and I know personally as well. Mr. Randy Knapp has joined us.
Hey, Randy.
Hey, greetings.
How you doing, Randy?
I'm doing good.
Good. Say hi to Jamal.
Hey, Jamal. How's it going?
Okay.
So, now you, this is kind of interesting, because you work in training, Randy, and have you used any of Jamal's, you know, tools with your clients?
Not with clients. I've used them for personal use, and I think they're terrific, particularly the PDF program that converts PDFs to text. I just love.
Yeah.
And Don's on me to use some other things, so I'm sure I will.
Oh, Don's on everybody to use all kinds of things.
Yes.
All right. Well, now you know Jamal pretty well. From
yes, I do.
Just hanging out and all that kind of fun stuff, and we see each other all the time at CSUN and things.
Uh huh.
Are you in Cleveland, Randy?
I am in Cleveland. I know it's one of those places that people say you should be from rather than still living in, but that's where I am.
By the way, Randy, I'm going to blame you for the Wildcats losing yesterday because I spoke to you yesterday.
Sounds as good a read as any.
I'll just blame you because that's good enough.
Well, if Ohio State loses tomorrow night, I'll blame you because they're playing in your state.
That's right, and let's hope they don't.
Exactly.
Because I'll hear from you.
You will.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jamal. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Oh, no. I remember Randy and you had a partner, Joe.
Joe Roeder.
Joe Roeder, yeah. You guys had a PC Partners group in Baltimore at one point, didn't you?
That's right. We sure
did. Am I getting the name right?
Okay. About 7 years we did that.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. And Joe's working for NIB now and is doing real well, and, of course, we still keep in touch.
Did you used to work for Arctic as well?
I did.
Yeah,
he
okay.
certainly did.
Okay.
Yeah, I certainly did. Those years are some of the shortest, longest periods of my life.
That's pretty good, Randy. Oh, yeah, Randy and I go way back. Definitely to the Arctic days. I can remember having conversations with him.
I never fully understood what happened to that company. It seemed like they had a pretty good Windows product, and then they just kind of faded from the scene.
Yeah, it was rather unfortunate because they really had something going there.
I think that what happened there was you had a very creative group of people, but you didn't have enough people to spread the load over, and at a point, the primary mover and shaker that did a lot of the work sort of burn out on it.
Let's just hope that doesn't happen to Jamal.
One would agree with that completely, yes.
Yes, exactly. Although that tends to happen with developers, so it's kind of tough. So, all right, Randy, did you have anything else for Jamal?
No, I don't. I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were Skyping him at the moment, or I would have respected that. Sorry about that.
No, that's quite all right. We're actually doing the show live. You're not listening, I suppose.
And I just put on my computer. I was going to actually go do that now, and then I saw you online on Skype, and, well, maybe I'll talk to you before you do it, and then, lo and behold, here I am.
There you are. You're live and direct. You actually you snuck in under the radar, because the 800 number actually forwards to Skype. So that's why I didn't know. I thought maybe it was you coming in on the 800 side of things. So, all right, Randy.
Can I sneak a 10-second question?
Sure.
What's the model number that Olympus you were telling me about?
Oh, it's the DS50. Actually, it's the DS30, 40, and 50, and we'll talk a little bit about that during the second hour of the show if we have time.
All right, I'm going to go jump on the railway and listen.
Okay. All right, Randy.
Take care, Jamal. Have a happy New Year.
Oh, you too.
Thanks, Randy, for Skyping in tonight.
Okay.
866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. I actually thought he called in on the 800 number. And no, he snuck in on the Skype side of the world. It's pretty funny, actually.
You're so well connected, Jeff. You don't know where everybody's coming from.
We're lack of organization. I'm not sure which. All right. So then, where did you go next?
Well, what happened, and this is kind of a pivotal event in my life. Mm-hmm. Was that I reached a point where I thought I was about to get a promotion, in the sense of a position where I would be developing database applications on a school-wide basis, not just for the alumni office.
Oh, okay.
And I had actually given a pitch to another department, and they seemed interested in working with me. But then it was at that time Windows
Yes.
The market by storm for any organization of significant size.
What year was that, Jamal?
It was
91, 92?
I think it was 93 or 4 by then.
Okay.
But some people had started putting Windows on their computers. It kind of hadn't yet become the standard at the school yet, but people had been installing it.
Yeah.
And
so this was Windows 3.1 and
yes. Yeah, and it was, you know, the sexy thing for sighted people all of a sudden doing something with a mouse and graphical user interface.
Absolutely.
And understandably, from their perspective, they thought, well, heck, if we're going to have a new system that people are going to learn and we're going to develop over time, we want it to be a Windows-based system, not a DOS-based system. And so I was going to develop a system in that case, it was called the Alpha, let's see, I think it was Alpha 4.
Yes, Alpha 4, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Alpha 4 for Windows was not out yet, and the most obvious choice if they wanted a Windows-based one was Microsoft Access. And at that time, there were a few Windows screen readers out, but none of them worked
with Access.
With Access.
When I went to work for Microsoft in when was that, Carrie? Is this December of 95? Because we bought the house in we moved into the house in January of 96, right? Carrie's in the room here. We moved into the house in January of 96, right? Yeah, we've been here 10 years. 11 years. Jeez.
I don't remember what year it was.
I do.
Better get this right, Jeff.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, that's right, exactly. Well, I went to work for Microsoft during that time, supporting Microsoft Access when Windows 95 was just coming out. And, I know all about using Access with a screen reader, well, or at least attempting to use it with a screen reader. That was definitely some interesting, challenging times.
And from what I hear, you really became with Microsoft Access. But
yeah, Jim Lucy, who worked for Microsoft at the time, really helped me with that. He wrote some tools that did what basically your layout by code does, which is basically a tool set to lay out, you know, designs basically for forms. And so he helped me develop this form where, you know, customers would call me and say, hey, you know, I'm putting a label and a text box and a list box and a checkbox and a, you know, and a button on the form, and I'm trying to do this and blah 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 blah, and so I would do it using this form, and customers would go, well, how are you doing it? I'd go, of course, I'd say, well, not exactly the way you are, but it achieves the same result. So it was definitely kind of an interesting situation. So, okay, so you were going for the promotion, and
well, so I researched, you know, what I could do with Microsoft Access, and I concluded that I just couldn't do the job.
Right.
I couldn't develop a professional quality application,
right.
And so I just saw the handwriting on the wall for myself that not that I expected I would have been laid off, but that I would have just continued to work on
legacy stuff, yeah,
for the foreseeable future, rather than have my position upgraded to one of more responsibility, which was something I had been working toward for years. And so for the first time, and I didn't see this problem being solved any time soon. I mean, the barrier was just that great. It was quite disheartening. And so for the first time, I became open to positions that were disability-related, which, as I mentioned before, I had tried to avoid in my
right.
day job before.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fortunate to get a good position as a legislative analyst
at
a small government independent federal agency called the National Council on Disability in Washington. So,
So what did you do for them?
I would track legislation, bills, the congressional record, statements that members of Congress made on the floor, positions that advocacy groups would take, anything related to disability policy, and I would summarize that in briefings to our board, and I would draft positions on issues which the board would then, you know, work with me on and come up with their final position to try to influence what the outcome might be.
Mm-hmm. So how long were you there for?
Let's see, about 4 years. Like,
4 years,
95 to 99.
Okay, and then where'd you go?
And then I came to the Federal Communications Commission.
Ah, good old FCC.
Where I've been since.
Yeah, now what are you doing for them?
Well, what attracted me to the FCC was that it was a much larger agency, and it was a chance to be able to do both disability and non-disability work.
Right, yeah.
And to combine the interests of both public policy and technology, which were both strong interests of mine. So
mm-hmm.
initially I was doing more disability-related reviews of policy at the FCC, Section 508, Section 255, how the agency should implement those.
So were you involved in the whole...
reviews of the website.
Right.
What's that?
Were you involved in this whole DVS discussion then? As part of the FCC?
I was not, because I wasn't... Yeah, I wasn't actually in the department that officially dealt with that, but I'm certainly aware of it.
Yeah, but I didn't know, since you had worked for them, I didn't know if they...
Yeah, no, I wasn't actually involved in it.
Okay, okay. Okay, so now, do you do any, technical work?
Yeah, so I for the most part, in the beginning, I was doing disability-related policy, and then also accessible technology stuff, and more recently, I have been doing more programming. I work for a division that does research and publishes reports related to trends in the telephone industry.
Oh, interesting.
And I've been doing programming related to
get our telephone
data manipulation
taxes down
and that kind of stuff. What's that?
Get our telephone taxes down then.
That's what everybody tells me. There seems to be unanimity on that.
That'd be pretty funny. Yeah, I could just see Jamal writing something now. Yeah. Here, run this.
Yeah, exactly. This program has the answer. Just run it till the end and do what it says.
Exactly. Yeah, pick up your phone, dial *#492. Yeah. Oh, man. So, all right. Well, so let's now, unless you wanted to cover any more on FCC stuff.
Oh, that generally
covers it. Okay. All right, so now the long-awaited time has come to talk about what you're up to these days. And, man, oh, man, you're going to have to help me along here because I'm aware of a number of them, but you're going to have to help me with the list because it's vast and huge and long. And so the first one that I thought we'd talk about, and, again, if anyone wants to call in tonight, 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. Is the number that you can reach us tonight at. And Carrie's standing up here. Hello, Carrie. Are you leaving?
I found an email. It was in the spam filter.
Oh.
The thing.
Yeah, we've been having some interesting things going on here with our neighborhood. We've on our news, there's been two home invasions at gunpoint on our street.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so it's been pretty... We've been pretty focused on that type of a thing the last week or so, and not getting much sleep because there's helicopters flying around at night around the house. And
really?
Yeah, well, it's kind of a scary situation. But anyway, so the first one that I wanted to talk about, only because it seems to be one of the popular ones that people have mentioned tonight, is of course PDF to TXT. And first of all, why did you decide to think that was a necessity that you thought you needed, or what made you decide to write it?
Well, I've had an interest in access to information and to knowledge for a long time, and that's,
yes, that's
partly what my website was about, which
right.
I did kind of during the NCD years when I was gathering information anyway for my job, and I would put up stuff at night that I'd gather during the day, but...
Your site has become the screen reader test website.
It developed so many links that I then became self-conscious about adding more links. So
it's huge. I think it's about a meg in size.
I actually haven't updated it in years. But PDFs, as you know, have become kind of a common instrument or containers of knowledge. It's the most common publishing medium on the web for any kind of important document, be it a federal report or manual or
Technical
books,
manuals.
All kinds of stuff. Whenever an author wants real control over how a document looks, they want to do it in PDF. But partly for the reasons that it has this visual appeal, it's also been the most challenging electronic format for screen reader users. Some PDFs are entirely image-based and don't actually contain characters. They're just pictures of characters.
Mm-hmm.
Others do have underlying characters, but there can be problems of determining the proper reading order because they don't necessarily contain structure so that a screen reader knows, for example, how to read down a column as opposed to merging two different columns together of text.
Right.
So I had, and also being an avid reader myself, I would encounter these PDFs, and I was just kind of aware of them as this nagging accessibility issue. And I would try one PDF tool after another for extracting text and be dissatisfied with either the end result or just the time it took to operate that tool or the expense of it. And as I was developing my own programming skills, I came across a library that I thought did a pretty good conversion. At that time I was focusing on the language called Power Basic.
Yes.
And there were some header files available that worked with or include files, as they're sometimes called, that worked with Power Basic, so that I could incorporate that library, and I thought maybe I can make this my first GUI program, graphical user interface.
Right.
And so that's what I tried to do, and it also jived with what I was doing at work, because an assignment of mine had been to make recommendations to our organization about how we could publish reports in a more accessible manner.
Mm-hmm.
And PDFs had been the primary vehicle, and I just in general wanted to learn as much as possible about how PDFs are made and how they can be made more accessible.
So let's tell everybody, what does it do, and why would someone want to try it out?
Well, basically, it's a way of efficiently extracting text from a lot of PDFs. Mm-hmm. So if you have the free Adobe Reader, you can do most of what PDF to TXT does. You can get a PDF and do file, load it and then do file, save as text. It's just, it can take a lot of time, and it can often really slow down your computer working with Adobe Reader.
Tell me.
and just be a tedious, time-consuming process. With PDF to TXT, you can point to a folder that's full of PDFs and just with a single command convert them all to text, and each one will convert in a matter of seconds.
Oh, it's amazingly fast.
Just one after the other. You can also point to a web page on the internet, and it will that has PDFs as links, and it will convert them all into text files on your hard disk. It also has a viewing area itself, so if you want to open an individual PDF as text,
mm-hmm,
and then read it with your screen reader, you can do that as well.
Now, obviously, it doesn't do OCR.
It does not do OCR.
Right. So you have to. It has to be a text-based PDF, not an image.
Right.
Right. Right. Right. And do you handle like the? I mean, I already know the answers to these because I use it. But you obviously handle, you know, making sure line lengths are good and that type of thing?
Actually, I don't do much additional processing other than what this library does, which so my program just, well, the library.
So you're basically
extract a text from a page of a PDF file. PDF files are basically divided into pages.
Right.
So there's a routine in this library that will extract all text from a page, and my program then basically concatenates all of those pages together and saves it into a text file. And just from my comparisons, on average, it, when I've compared it to the results of other PDF programs, it does a good job. Occasionally, I will find times when Adobe Reader does better, but there are also times when this program seems to do better.
Yeah.
There's no comparison, you know, speed-wise.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, from a efficiency standpoint, there's not a comparison. Yeah, that's just crazy. Now, have you compared it with the new PDF 8.0 that's come out?
Actually, I have not tried that yet. Have you noticed significant
improvement? No, I haven't really noticed any real significant difference, although there's some... I think it is a little bit faster, but I don't know if it's, you know, that may just be me. I don't know. It seems to be, but oh, we have a caller. Let's take the caller here. Hold on a second. Let's make sure all the buttons are pushed and knobs are tweaked. Hello, caller, and welcome to the Marlena program. You're with Jamal and Jeff. Good evening. Hello.
Good evening, Jeff. Jamal is with you.
He is.
Yes, this is Jim Ansley calling.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I'm on the West Coast, so I'm 3 hours behind you, but I've really enjoyed the program you fellows have put on this evening, and I just want to reaffirm everything complimentary that has been said about Jamal up to this point. He's definitely the hardest working man in access programming, and he's benefited all of us who are blind and use computers just enormously. And I don't want to interrupt the flow of your conversation.
That's quite all right. That's what we're here for.
A lot about Jamal and what he's doing that I hadn't even known. But my one question for you, Jamal, would be we're on the verge now of Windows Vista coming on the scene.
Oh, yes.
And I'm curious to know how your products will interface with that and what challenges you anticipate in having to deal with that. It seems every time the technology changes, as it did from DOS to Windows 3.1, then to Windows 95.1, computer users who are blind have had to make adjustments, and the screen readers have had to make adjustments. So I'm curious, what do you anticipate?
That's great. Jim, can we go ahead and have you listen on the Internet?
Yeah.
Okay,
I'm going to cut off.
Okay, thanks, Jim. All right, go ahead and take that, Jamal.
Excellent question.
Yeah, very good.
Well, I have not yet tested any of the programs on Vista myself. I tend to have the view that I'll let the kinks be shaken out for a while.
Yeah.
But my guess is that the one that will be most compatible, easiest to get working, will be Filder. And that's because Filder uses what's called the .NET platform of Microsoft.
Right. That actually should probably work out of the box. I would.
Very close. I do call the screen reader APIs directly for JAWS and Window Eyes. And
sure.
I'm not certain yet if those APIs work as is on Vista, but
right.
I would think if anything that
I think the thing to remember
should be not those should be small changes.
I think the thing to remember here too is that really many of us, including myself, even though I've had access to beta versions of Vista, I personally have not been brave enough to put it on a system, and nor have I had the resources to do it anyway. But the consumer version of Vista is not even on the shelf yet, where we can go out and purchase that. It actually is coming out at the end of this month, and I think the screen reader companies are working on releases which will come out at or soon thereafter after the release of Vista. So, yeah, I think there's lots of questions, Jim, in reference to what Vista will or will not do for us. I, for one, I've already told my family, and I can guarantee you we will not be going to it at work anytime soon. I have always said that I'm going to give it at least a good 6 months, 6 to 9 months before I even consider upgrading. I'm going to let those of you who are brave enough to do it, go ahead and get on the bleeding edge. It seems that as I get older and older, I'm not as willing to destroy my system and have to work at learning a lot of new things all over again. So it makes it kind of tough. Thanks for the call and the question, Jim. It was definitely a fascinating one. 866-400-JEFF, 866-400-5333, if you would like to call in and talk to Jamal and myself. All right, so then, now that was your first GUI application, right?
Yes.
Right, so then I think, now correct me if I'm wrong, but I think TextPal came next?
The
JAWS thing, right?
Script Exchange.
Yes, JSE.
Which is a program that helps people
distribute scripts.
Share, JavaScript files.
Right.
And install them more easily.
Right.
And then...
Now, why did you decide to come out with TextPal? I mean, you know, there's lots of text editors out there that are, you know, pretty accessible. That being, you know, TextPad and Notepad and that type of thing. I was just kind of curious as to what, you know, what made you decide to kind of want to touch into a... I mean, it's awesome. I mean, don't get me wrong, but I was just kind of curious. Why was it
I make use of a text editor a lot myself for programming and reading another text
now,
manipulation.
Right?
So I would always be interested in kind of what are the features I really want in something. And I eventually I went shopping a lot myself, comparing different ones that I would download, eventually deciding I thought Notepad Pro was the best one.
Yeah.
But to get it to do everything that I wanted in a speech-friendly manner, I started writing JAWS scripts for it, and I ended up coming up with a pretty powerful set of scripts, but they also had limitations, and they would have a quirky element to them because of the gyrations I had to sometimes go through to try to get them to do what I wanted. And so the more I learned skills as a programmer that made me think maybe I could actually write a text editor myself and have control over the whole feature set, mm-hmm. not just kind of grafting on a set of scripts.
Right.
For me, I've always found the best way to learn a programming language is to actually
pick a project and go, right?
Pick a project of personal interest.
Exactly.
And just get involved
get
in it.
Get dirty in the code, man.
And at that time, I had become intrigued with a language called Ruby, and I came across this library called WX Widgets. And I thought...
Actually, do you know that's what Juice is written with?
No, I didn't. Oh, okay.
So maybe cool. you should be the person to update, learn Python and...
Is it written in Python?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That whole horrible language which is based on indenting?
I do find that
awful,
a challenge.
Nasty, yucky, just... I don't know what who in their right mind would ever develop a language like that, but I mean, as far as indenting being part of the syntax of a language, that's just nuts. But that's no here nor there. But
yeah, it's
I spoke to Andrew Grumman.
Controversial point.
Yes, I spoke
Python
with Andrew.
Python programmers will defend it to the max.
Oh, God, yes. But I spoke with Andrew Grumman on this topic for about an hour one time, and he's like, well, you know, we'll just agree to disagree. And I'm like, yeah, well, that's fine. From an accessibility standpoint, that's tough. So, now, what kind of features do you think TextPal has that kind of stand out? I can think of a few off the top of my head, actually, but... We'll get it right from you.
Well, one of the distinguishing elements is it tries to use. I developed this idea of increasing the usability of an application by sending messages directly to. The APIs, application programming interface, of the screen reader so that the program could talk without it depending on what the screen reader observed on the screen and spoke automatically. So before that, kind of the paradigm had been just use standard Windows controls. Your standard, you know, edit box, list box, check boxes, message boxes, and then your application will be accessible. And for the most part, that is true. But there are reasons why applications have additional elements that increase the efficiency for sighted users, such as toolbars that make it just very easy for a sighted person to
click on
see a
something
picture and click on it and
exactly.
Something happens immediately.
Right.
Or there's another part of the screen that can update with a piece of information and all they have to do is glance over. And
exactly.
So when you try to make the equivalent for a blind person or say, well, the blind person can just go through all of these menus to activate something or activate a message box to get the information, there are disadvantages to that with efficiency. For example, just to take an example with TextPal, one TextPal command is Alt-A for address, and it says the line number, column number, and the percent through the document, like you're 10% through. and it does that by just sending that information directly to the API of JAWS or WindowEyes. There's nothing on the screen. Well, some of that information actually is on the status line, but not in the way that it expresses it.
Right, so as opposed to reading, you know, a whole big line which may have all kinds of other information on it.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of thing where if somebody has a screen reader configuration, like, for example, JAWS with Microsoft Word, there are, and WindowEyes does similar things, they define hotkeys that will give you little snippets of information.
Exactly.
So that you don't have to hear all of this other stuff just to get a targeted piece of information.
Exactly.
And if I were to use a message box, what would happen is,
well, then you have to
you could press Alt-A, and then your screen reader would say message box, and it would
exactly.
Read the title of the message box, and
you
then
have to close it.
The information, and then it would say OK button, and then you'd have to press Escape to dismiss the message box, and then it would read the title of your window again. And so anyway, I thought, you know, let's do some things now that this is possible, that these APIs have been published to increase the usability for screen reader users.
Right.
So TextPal has this query menu with all kinds of things that you can query with single hotkeys. And that's the other thing that distinguishes it. Whereas other programs use a lot of toolbars, and which often have features that don't have a direct keyboard equivalent. Every single command in TextPal has a keyboard assignment. Now, it's a lot to try to remember at once.
Yeah,
and
I was going
to
say,
you people know them besides me.
Yeah, there's literally 40,
but they're
50,
there.
75 of them.
They're there. Once, yeah. if you can always get a command from its menu, but if you find that it's a command that you start to use regularly, you can learn what the hotkey is, and I try to make them as mnemonic as possible. And so every single command you can do from the keyboard, and many commands you can get pieces of information through speech that don't depend on what is visually displayed. Just as another example, if you do a find and replace command with TextPal, it will tell you how many matches there were. So you just hear after you type in what you want to search for, what you want to replace, you hit enter, and it'll say, 11 matches. But that didn't appear visually.
Right.
Program isn't paused in some state where you have to look at that information amongst other information and then clear that. So these are the kinds of things that I think help distinguish TextPal. But then, in addition to that, I had this long-standing interest in converting things to text in order to make them more accessible. So I started incorporating features into TextPal that did things that I thought were particularly helpful for accessibility. So
right. Hold on,
you
one
can
second.
Open any file or any common file type through the normal mechanism, like a PDF, a Word document, HTML, and
you can even
when
open
TextPal will notice the extension, and if it's not text, it'll just automatically convert it to text. You don't have to do anything special.
That's nice. Hey, Jamal, we have a caller. Hello, caller, and welcome to the Marlena program. Hello, caller.
Hello there.
Hello, Tim. How are you?
How are you today?
Good. We can barely hear you, though.
I do have a question for you, though.
Sure, go right ahead.
Is the program...
Go right ahead.
Is the program available on the internet?
Yes, all of these programs are available, and if you keep listening, we'll give you more information about how you can get them. We're actually going to be putting up, as part of the archive, we'll be putting up a page with all of the links, and I'll also send that on the ACB Radio Friends list.
Cool.
All right?
Okay, thanks.
Oh, sure. Thanks for calling. 866-400-JEFF, 866-400-5333. And, all right. So, yeah, you can open up Word docs, HTML, PDF, and someone even, I haven't even tried this, but someone said you could even open up an Excel spreadsheet.
You can.
Yeah.
Sorry, my voice is a bit gruff. I'm just getting over a cold.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, very, very cool. So, great. And then of course, what came after TextPal?
Well, actually, before TextPal, I developed this library called Layout by Code.
Yes.
In a language called AutoIt. And then I used that library as to help me develop a database program, which I called DB Dialog. That program has probably been used the least of all of mine in terms of the amount of feedback, I guess. So I guess I need to go back and work on that one some more, or else just there isn't as much of a general interest in
programs,
which I think is partly the issue.
We have another caller, by the way, Jamal.
Okay.
Hello, caller. Welcome to the Marlena program.
Hi, this is Kim.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Good. How can we help you tonight?
Jamal's my big brother. I admire him a lot.
Oh, my goodness.
Very cool. Oh, great. I got a
question for you, Jamal. I was going to ask in person, but I might as well do it on Worldwide Radio.
Very good. I bet you could tell us some stories about Jamal, huh? Did he pick on you?
Oh, yeah.
Did he pick on
but,
you when you were a kid?
Save it for another time. My question is this. Do you have advice for... You know, if like there's a new book on the market and the publisher can't provide it in accessible form, what's the best way to kind of scan it and optical character read it? I think Microsoft might have an optical character reader in its Office program, but there may be better ones on the market that are more precise. Do you have any advice about OCR for, you know, books that aren't available in electronic form from the publisher?
Okay.
Do you mean programs like OpenBook and Kurzweil 1000?
I think that's what he's. I think that's
well,
what
he's. Yeah, those would work. I guess in my situation, I can scan it into a PDF, but then it would just be an image file. So, like you were talking earlier about image files for PDFs and things like that. So,
well, I think what you
how
could
do.
How do
optical character read a PDF that's just an image file?
Well,
you have to. Well, it's Kurzweil. Is that sort of the best one on the market, or how do you extract from the kind of image scan file of a book?
Well, I think
or a smaller document,
right,
like you could scan, you know, obviously an article or something like that.
Jamal, if you don't mind, I'll go ahead and
sure, go
take this. I think really you have two choices. I mean, if you're going to get an image PDF, then you could either use OpenBook or you know, K1000, and they have features where you can print the PDF and it will do optical character recognition on the file. And then I think there's some commercial applications as well that are available. I think, doesn't PDF Magic do some work in that area? Do you know, Jamal?
PDF Magic, so I think the commercial ones like OmniPage, FineReader.
Yeah, a lot of them do the same
packages.
Kind of thing.
They can also handle either doing OCR from paper or on an image-based PDF. I think they can convert them to text as well. So if you don't actually need the talking features of something like Kurzweil 1000
right,
or OpenBook, the commercial OCR packages, the full-featured ones, such as OmniPage, I think would do the job.
Would do the job too, so, and they're also probably quite a bit less expensive as well. All right, does that answer your question tonight?
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you
for calling.
Good job, bro.
Yeah.
See you later.
Catch you, boy.
What a surprise!
They're all coming out of the woodwork here. So, and then you finally came out with FileDir, right?
Right, right.
Which you want to go ahead and describe basically what that is. It's pretty amazing. It has quite a bit of functionality there.
Yeah, well, this is, as I mentioned, I had done this talking directory program in the DOS days. And then, so all within my mind was, what are features that make it easier to manage files? And do everything that you'd want to be able to do with file and folder manipulation. And under Windows, I first did JAWS scripts for a program called PowerDesk and then one called Explorer Plus. And then, kind of similar to the way with TextPal, I had first done scripts for a text editor, Notepad Pro, and then felt that I knew enough and had a language that I thought I could use to write the application from scratch. I thought I could do this with the C# language for the .NET platform, and I thought, hey, this, if I really want to learn C#, this is an application I think that I could do with that. And So on the blind programming list, momentum had gathered around all trying to learn a particular language together, and that ended up being C#. and that effort, by the way, was partly motivated by Chris Hofstadter, whom you recently interviewed on Main Menu. So I've tried to do that, and I've been working on it for months, but it's meant as an alternative to Windows Explorer. So copying, moving files. It has conversion features too, kind of like TextPal, so you can convert various file formats to text. It tries to make the process of selecting files more convenient than Windows Explorer or My Computer, where, as you know, if you're trying to select multiple ones, you kind of have to go through this awkward process as a keyboard user of holding down the control key while you down arrow, and then when you find one you want, you can hit spacebar to make it be selected. But if you accidentally hit a key that changes the focus, so let's just say it, I wasn't holding down the control key and I hit the down arrow, all of my previous selections would be lost, and the only one that would now be selected would be the one that the arrow key landed on. And there's no convenient way to jump to a file. So let's say I wanted to go to a file that was 20 down in the list and select that, but not the ones in between. Well, a sighted person can just kind of look at the screen and click with their mouse, but we have to go through this, hold down the control key, down arrow. So part of what FileDAR does as well is introduce a tagging mechanism so that tags are more permanent and that they aren't easily lost in that way. And it, like TextPal, it has all kinds of query commands for getting targeted pieces of information, like a key to get the size of the file, or its date and time, or to list the combined sizes of a bunch of files. It also has things that support working with zip archives, so you can zip and unzip files, or you can browse the contents of a zip archive as if it was a directory.
Yeah, that's great. All right, well, we're nearing, we've got about 15 minutes left here, and before we let you go, I did want to ask you one question, only because, you know, you're now really kind of doing GUI type stuff, and I wanted to get your opinion about where do you think programming is headed in reference to, you know, graphical user environments? Do you think, you know, obviously probably the most difficult piece of doing development, and we don't want to get real techie here, but really the most difficult part of it really is the layout. You know, designing forms and designing screens that look aesthetically pleasing to the eye. That's probably really new operating systems and things like that. But I wanted to get your opinion on, you know, from a person who does, and I would consider you, you know, a professional programmer. You know, how do you foresee things evolving in this space?
Well, it's definitely mixed. I do think, as you say, that the most challenging aspect for blind programmers over the last decade has been GUI design. There's just been much more of an emphasis on graphical controls and how them being laid out in a aesthetically pleasing manner, and it's been difficult for us for two reasons. One is not being sighted, it's harder to apprehend exactly what's needed to satisfy sighted users.
Exactly.
But the other part has been that even when we can, the tools to get there have not been accessible.
Nope.
The tools themselves have assumed sighted programmers.
Exactly.
And they've been extremely visually oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, they involve a kind of toolbox with pictures of different controls. And
you just drag and drop them
and
around.
Yeah, exactly. They're supposed to drag it over there and then click on the borders of the control
to adjust the size or position,
this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that Windows Vista
probably going to make it worse.
It tries to be even nicer to sighted people, with more fancy visual effects. I mean, they say it's always just to make it easier for sighted users, but
exactly.
But I think there's also this element of something isn't fancy enough anymore. It's boring, so they have to introduce another element to the visual landscape.
Do you think that this is going
to
jeopardize?
Add some more excitement to it, and whenever there's yet another element that we have to be aware of, whether it's font differences, color differences, some whatever, it gets more challenging. On the other hand, a positive trend that I've seen is that there's more of an interest in cross-platform application development. Even Microsoft developed the .NET platform with the goal of it being able to be ported to other operating systems,
sure,
including mobile devices, even Linux. There is a Microsoft didn't do it, but there is a version called the Mono project for Linux. And a side effect of that is that in order to have layouts that work on various kinds of devices, there have to be easier mechanisms for automatically laying out things so that an application can figure out how to line things up in a pleasing way without that being hard-coded. So the more that... that's why, for example, Microsoft and this WX widgets library we talked about before,
mm-hmm,
has these tools that help you lay out controls. They're called layout managers or sizer controls, and they do help take the tedium out of laying out so that you don't have to necessarily say this is going to be this many pixels wide and this
mm-hmm
many pixels high.
Mm-hmm.
You can just say put this control to the right of this control and have its top borders aligned and make it just wide enough to fit the text that it contains and
nice,
no wider. And you don't have to go through those calculations as a programmer yourself. So that's a positive counter trend.
Interesting. Interesting. And you did all that through text? I mean, you didn't have to use any...
Yes, yes.
Interesting.
Okay.
I'll have to talk to you about that. But all right, well, let's end with you here on a personal note. And so we sort of touched on this during the first hour, and obviously the new baby... maybe we should ask Susan this. how has your new one really kind of changed you? Has it really made a? I mean, obviously it's a life changing thing, but
it has. As you know, as a father yourself, Jeff, it's hard to describe. But knowing that you're responsible for someone else gives you a new perspective on life. I think I've
indeed.
When I'm outside crossing streets, I pause a little longer.
I
make sure that I take a little more time to make sure I can try to get there safely. I think another time before taking a health risk.
Not going to try that skydiving, huh?
And another thing is just, it's just so neat to see kind of the innocence of
a
baby, that that the whole world is before them, and they don't have any grudges against anybody or any
not
prejudice.
Yet. Wait till they're two.
Okay.
We'll bring you on in a couple of years, and we'll ask you this question again, and you'll be going, you know. That's very,
yeah,
very good.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, we really want to thank you very, very, very much for especially the second hour. Man, we've had you here for a lot longer than you and I originally intended to, and I'm sorry about that. But I really do want to thank you. And you and I discussed that you'll get us you'll get us an email with all of the links to things, and we'll definitely get that out to both the friends list, and we'll put it up as part of the archive of this show up on the on-demand archives for the Marlena program.
Sure thing. And thank you, Jeff, for all you do for ACB Radio.
Well, thank you, and keep up the great tools, man. You make our lives a lot easier, that's for darn sure. So, well, thank you again, Jamal, and we'll be in touch.
Okay.
Okay, good night. All right, there goes Jamal. Absolutely fascinating, fascinating individual. Really admire him for what he's doing and releasing all these things for all of us to utilize and to be able to make our lives better and more productive. And an absolutely fascinating gentleman. Have really enjoyed speaking to him, and want to thank all of you for calling in tonight. I really, really do appreciate that. That's for darn sure. That's what the show's all about, having you guys call in and participate. So, one of the things many of you may or may not have heard about on the last Marlena program on Friday, folks, she does that show, and on the interactive side of things, she announced to everybody on that show that she's going to go see... Right, Ronnie Millsap. That's right. She's going to see him live in concert, and she's very, 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 very excited about that. And so, in celebration of that, let's listen to good old Ronnie, and we'll be right back.
I was kicked back in a Reddit cabana, easing my mind with some old Carlos Santana, nibbling on a banana moon pie when I swore I saw an angel. Heaven floating by, then I thought, no, no way, she must be from around here. She got one of those tans you just know she wears all year. Swaying, sashaying, flip-flopping along, like wherever she may be, is right where she belongs. And I thought, Pacifico. And she said, as luck would have it, I got nothing but time. She reached in her backpack, said, down here you'll find that a lady don't leave home without a couple of lines. And I said, as that big orange sun is setting, I can't believe how good it's still getting as I watch my daughters splashing in the water. And I say,
Connie Millsap, and I'm sure she's definitely. As earphones are falling out of my ears. Definitely looking forward to that. And well, we'll be back next week with another edition of the Marlena program, and then she'll be back. Don't forget that the contest for the slogan for ACB is still going on, and during the week of the 21st, Rachel and Marlena will be coming on and announcing the winner of that contest. So definitely get your submissions in, and hope you just might win. So, all right, everybody, we're going to go ahead and call it a night here on the Marlena Show. And we'll be back next week with yet another show here. I'm going to now go eat dinner and spend some time with the family here, and maybe watch the keynote address from Bill Gates from CES. See what kind of interesting stuff might be coming out for us in the coming year here. So, kind of fascinating. All right. Well, Marlena, take us out of here. Good night, everybody.
I'm Marlena, and this is the music of Lee Rettenhauer, A Little Dolphin Dreamin', as we go out for this week. It's been a joy to be with you, and I hope you'll come back next week right here on ACB Radio Mainstream. Let me thank the team that helps make all of this happen. That's Chrissy Cochran in the UK, Jeff Shang in Australia, and Gary the Bored Guy in the other room. We'll be back again, same time, same place, next week here on ACB Radio Mainstream. But if you'd like to send me an email in the meantime, you can address it to Marlena. That's M-A-R... L-A-I-N-A at acbradio.org. Till we're together again, have a great week, and we'll see you next time, right here on Mainstream.